Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.
It's 106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
That's a clip from one of the greatest music action comedies of all time. Perhaps the only music action comedy? I'm talking, of course, about The Blues Brothers, starring John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd. Journalist Daniel DeVase is the definitive source for ATBB, All Things Blues Brothers. Daniel is on a mission from God to tell you all about this classic. His definitive book is called The Blues Brothers, An Epic Friendship, The Rise of Improv, and The Making of an American Classic. We learned all kinds of fun facts and history about how John and Dan turned a pioneering bit on Saturday Night Live into a groundbreaking film.
They had more in common than they probably realized when they met, because there's all sorts of fascinating parallels that I discovered in writing the book. You know, they both wanted to be musicians. They both wanted to be in bands. They both had this habit of straying from the script when they were acting in school and improvising instead of sticking to the script, which you're not supposed to do, but both of them had the impulse to do it. They both were very funny. They both were very intelligent, but in different ways, sort of maybe a little divergent from the sort of factory education model, if you will.
Mm-hmm. How did John and Dan go from being really good friends to creating the Blues Brothers?
Well, that was over a series of wonderful steps. The first thing was that they wound up on the cast of Saturday Night Live together. So Aykroyd did not join Belushi in National Lampoon, but a short while later, they both auditioned and won parts in the founding cast of SNL. And I think that Ivan Reitman's son is doing a movie on that, the beginning of SNL. So SNL, Saturday Night Live, debuted as Saturday Night in the autumn of 1975 with Belushi and Aykroyd in attendance. And they became fast friends. They became office mates in this apparently horrible office that probably smelled bad, and constant companions. They wrote together, they performed together, they spent lots and lots and lots and lots of time together. Very early on in season one, they worked up a little sort of blues combo thing, which exorcised this musical impulse both of them had. So by the January of 76, just a few months into SNL, they're on stage live on television in bee costumes performing I'm a King Bee.
I'm a king bee, baby. Want you to be my queen. We're all together, we can make honey, baby. The world has never seen a steamy bear.
That, in a sense, was the sort of gestation of the Blues Brothers. That wasn't really the Blues Brothers, but they became the Blues Brothers.
Mm-hmm. And Belushi, correct me if I'm wrong, Dan, but John Belushi did not like wearing the bee costume, did he?
He never did. And Lorne Michael is a funny guy, has a wicked sense of humor. And so the more that Belushi, especially Belushi, and also the others pushed back against the repellent bees, the more Lorne Michael kept using the bees and making them dress as bees, because that was sort of his twisted sense of humor. And there was a sort of a standoff where they're all in the bee costumes. And I think it's the night when Rob Reiner is hosting, and Belushi just goes off and says, I can't stand this being a bee, you know.
I'm sorry if you think we're ruining your show, Mr. Reiner. But, see, you don't understand. We didn't ask to be bees. You see, you've got Norman Lear and a first-rate writing staff. But this is all they came up with for us. Do you think we like this? No. No, Mr. Reiner. But we don't have any choice.
I was surprised to learn I wasn't that surprised to learn about how Belushi was like really sort of like really was burned a lot of bridges or was willing burn bridges. Yeah.
Right. I would argue that he had a self-destructive impulse that was really around this painful fear of failure. Time and again, he would sort of sabotage his own prospects for a job he really, really, really wanted. And the obvious example of this is the interview for Saturday Night Live. He comes into Lorne Michaels' office and proceeds to sort of sneer about television. He hates television. He can't stand it. He spits on his television and he tromps around the room yelling and screaming. And Lorne Michaels like, why in heck are you here then if you don't want to be on television? And the truth was, deep down, Belushi was dying to be on this show. And he was terrified he wouldn't get the part. And so he had this horrible habit of sort of nuking his own chances by sort of acting out. And it wasn't the only time he did that.
Mm-hmm. What did Lorne think of the Boos Brothers?
Not much at first. I think he thought it was maybe something ephemeral, a phase perhaps. And indeed, the Blues Brothers, after that one performance, they sort of disappeared. At least you didn't see anything more from them on the show. And I guess they went into sort of hibernation. You know, Belushi and Aykroyd were very busy. Now, Aykroyd insisted to me that they never forgot about these characters, but they didn't do much with them for the next year or two. And then Belushi goes to film Animal House in 1977. And there in Oregon, he befriends a guy named Curtis Salgado, who played in a band with a phenomenal young guitarist named Robert Cray. And Salgado turns on Belushi to the blues in a way that he hadn't been before. And so when he returns from that shoot for Animal House, both he and Aykroyd, who's a huge blues devotee, now both of them are really burning to do the blues. Basically, by 1978, they've tried out the Blues Brothers again and really want to be on live TV as the Blues Brothers in these characters that Aykroyd has sketched out. And again, Lorne, I think, is sort of dismissive, but he finally says something to the effect of, well, if you guys want to make fools of yourself, we're 3 minutes short, be my guest. Talking to you on a dusty road. Good loving, I got a truckload.
John and Dan were able to get some great musicians to play on the Blues Brothers album. Guests like Steve the Colonel Cropper from Booker T and the MGs and Matt Guitar Murphy from Howlin' Wolf's band. How important were these musicians to the success of the Blues Brothers?
I think Belushi wanted to have the best people available. He was a real hard-driving guy when he was devoted to something. And I'm sure Aykroyd was thrilled at this and probably pushed just as hard. Now, a lot of the band, which is to say the horns, they sort of already had, because Saturday Night Live had a terrific band. So the horn section is largely the Saturday Night Live band, but the rhythm section they got from the Stax operation down in Memphis, that's Cropper and Dunn, and they really completed the outfit. So by the time you wedded those two contingents, you had this amazing, really peerless rhythm and blues ensemble. And yes, it's very important. I think that it's why they were taken seriously when they went out on tour. And another interviewer reminded me of the sheer oddity that these two television stars suddenly think that they're musical performers and want to go out and tour the country with a band. But the reason they were taken seriously, this is to a great extent, was that they had this wonderful band behind them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Very well said. When did John and Dan decide that they wanted to make a Blues Brothers movie?
I'm not even sure that really it was their decision. Once the Blues Brothers were a going concern, and this is in 1978, they played a bunch of shows opening for Steve Martin. They made a record. By the end of the year, this Blues Brothers record was the number one record. And Belushi had the number one comedy, Animal House. At that point, basically the stars of Saturday Night Live, which was the number one sort of late night show. So he was hitting on every, especially Belushi, was just ascending into superstardom. So I think you could argue there was no question there was huge interest in doing some kind of film about the Blues Brothers. The question was which studio would make it? Well, Universal had made Animal House and really wanted to make it. And then what on earth is this film going to be? But it's interesting. I think that all of Hollywood sort of was abuzz with the idea of there being some sort of breakout film starring the Blues Brothers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. John Landis famously directed Belushi's breakout movie, Animal House, and worked with Dan Aykroyd on the screenplay. What was the storyline they came up with?
Well, it was kind of goofy. Aykroyd, first and foremost, wanted to do something that would amplify the careers of and serve as a showcase for the greats of rhythm and blues. And I'm not even sure if he knew exactly who he wanted to be on the film, but this ends up being the absolute greats, Ray Charles, Aretha Franklin, James Brown, and so forth.
We're on a mission from God.
In the film, the mission from God is, I think, saving money, gathering tax money up for an orphanage. But the real mission from God, the real reason for the film, was so that Dan and John and Landis could showcase these great rhythm and blues artists. And the plot, which again was goofy, was that they had to raise $5,000 in tax money. What Catholic orphanage pays taxes? You tell me. I don't think even in Canada they do that. But no. That was what he thought the plot was going to be.
You're such a disappointing pair. I prayed so hard for you. It saddens and hurts me that the two young men whom I raised to believe in the Ten Commandments have returned to me as two thieves with filthy mouths and bad attitudes. Get out and don't come back until you've redeemed yourselves.
Now, I read a lot of the original 300 and some page script for the Blues Brothers. Originally, it was a very, very, very long film, like 300 minutes or something. And there was a backstory for each musician. It was crazy, but they cut it.
Mm-hmm. Some film critics have said that the Blues Brothers movie was fundamentally racist. How so?
Yeah, they said it then, and they would probably say it now. Happily for me as the writer, all of that was aired out at the time in 1979 and 1980. And even before there was a movie, music writers, especially in the alternative press, accused the Blues Brothers band of, you know, cultural appropriation, these white guys going out and singing black music. How dare they? Yeah, the issue was thoroughly aired at the time. In their defense, the Blues Brothers would have said, and critics who were more sympathetic would say, well, the Blues Brothers were these super, super famous guys. And so if they're going to go and tour and be a band, fine. You know, I'm sure in their minds, Belushi and Aykroyd were promoting this wonderful music of Black America. I mean, no question that's what they were trying to do. Now, I'll tell you this. When I went and saw the Blues Brothers for the first time, which was probably when I was 12 or 13, I didn't go out and buy the Blues Brothers soundtrack, which is Belushi singing rhythm and blues classics. I went and bought The Best of Sam and Dave. And I think that's very much what Aykroyd would have wanted, and Belushi too.
Absolutely, definitely. Very well said. Unfortunately, John Belushi died from combined drug intoxication on March 5th of 1982. He was only 33. What happened to the Blues Brothers concept after John died?
I mean, I think the concept pretty much died with him. Now, of course, the Blues Brothers endure to this day, and other people, other very capable people, have stepped in to fill those shoes. Belushi's brother, Jim Belushi, John Goodman, and other people. And there's all innumerable other characters have gone out and done the Blues Brothers act hither and thither and yon. Yeah, I think that this wonderful partnership, they played a show, I think, at Poplar Creek in Chicago not long after the film came out, and nobody knew it then. But that would be the last time that John and Dan performed together as the Blues Brothers. I mean, I'm sure they never would have guessed that that was it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. It's been 44 years since the original Blues Brothers movie was released. How do you think it holds up?
Well, consider this. There is no sort of gratuitous nudity in it. I think that's a huge plus. So many R-rated movies from that era, comedies and otherwise, are full of objectification of women. And I don't think there's a bit of that in the Blues Brothers. In fact, the only reason I think that it's rated R is a bunch of F-bombs. And then the other thing I have to say is it's aged beautifully in as much as those showcase musical scenes where Aretha Franklin and James Brown and Cab Calloway and the rest have aged gorgeously. You go on YouTube and they have millions of views and they're just beautiful, beautiful set pieces. And I think for each of those respective artists, they're as good an artifact as you're going to find of sort of filmed performance. And granted, it's staged, but they're beautiful performances. Even at the time, the critics who eviscerated the film allowed that those musical numbers weren't so bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, you're quite right on that, I think. Dan DeVase, thank you very much for joining us today. Congratulations on the Blues Brothers, an epic friendship, the rise of improv, and the making of an American film classic. It's a fantastic book.
Thank you for having me.
Daniel DeVase is the author of The Blues Brothers, An Epic Friendship, The Rise of Improv, and The Making of an American Film Classic. Find out more about Daniel and The Blues Brothers at wpr.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Nadira Simmons, George Pelicanos, and Daniel DeVase.
What you're gleaning from these interviews is groundbreaking.
Beta is available to follow on Spotify or wherever you catch your favorite pods. Don't forget to offer a rating or to share with new alphas. And you can keep up with us during the week online at wpr.org/beta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic.
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
Well, try not to be so negative all the time. Why don't you offer some constructive criticism?
Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich.
Breaks my heart for that young going bad.
And thanks to you, our alphas.
Who wants an orange whip? Orange whip? Orange whip? Three orange whips.
More Beta comes your way next week. Until then, I'm Doug Gordon.
You're the only one that was ever good to us.
Okay, man. We'll take these axes.
Naturally. And as usual, I gotta take an IOU.